when your innovation is outpacing your understanding of what you're doing, especially chasing profit, you get into dangerous territory. And oftentimes we don't have, you know, an understanding, we don't have following regulation until there's mass tragedy.
Watching and listening. Welcome to another episode of Unrestricted. I'm your host, Veronica Kirilenko. And today I'm speaking with Tiffany Crack, a co-founder of Parents' Rights Maine and the executive director of its sister organization, Health Choice Maine, a nonprofit engaged in activism, advocacy, education, and litigation concerning medical informed consent, wellness, and healthcare. Tiffany, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Tiffany, let's start with your story, if you don't mind. When and why did you decide that you wanted and needed to help your fellow Mainers with healthcare-related matters?
Yeah, so my journey kind of really started a little over a decade ago. I took my son to a catch-up appointment at his pediatrician's. And within an hour of that appointment, we were in the emergency room. Over the course of the next couple of weeks in and out of the hospital, he was diagnosed with an encephalopathy. The pediatrician's office shut us out completely. In fact, I got a letter from the pediatrician's office about a week later that we had been ejected from the practice. That was sort of what put me on this path of realizing none of our agencies or industries work the way we all thought they did. You don't realize how quickly mainstream medicine will slam its door in your face when you become inconvenient, or when you are the person that's not supposed to exist, when you're the family that's not supposed to exist. In 2018, in November of 2018, after the election, we went into the election a heavily Republican state. We came out a Democrat trifecta. And at the end of November, the incoming legislative body announced their intention to remove non-medical vaccine exemptions. My husband and I had a discussion that night that how much were we willing to give here? And we sort of hit the ground running in 2019 and we've not stopped. They say everybody that needs a medical exemption will be able to get one. That was sort of our issue, was for 10 years, we should have had one and we were unable to get one because of the CDC's rigidly strict guidelines to medical exemptions. So we started, to all vaccines. So we started fighting Bill LD-798 in Maine, which removed non-medical exemptions. And then COVID hit and the COVID vaccine requirements came down. And it's sort of been one thing after another since then.
And have you been successful in your fight? Where are you now?
We have won a lot of battles that we're really grateful for. We have not won the bigger ones yet, like restoring our religious exemption. We sued DHHS in 2021. We had, I think, 13 different counts in our complaint. We only won one of them, which is sort of outstanding considering our political landscape up here. But we did win one. We have another suit right now in the state Supreme Court against Maine EMS because they issued their own vaccine requirement for first responders. And they fired whole departments in rural areas. So 100 square miles of Maine had no emergency medical services. And this was somehow better to them than having a department of experienced, trained, efficient, professionals that just weren't vaccinated.
It sounds so crazy. Tiffany, would you say that advocacy and your legal work is the mission of Health Choice Maine, or is it broader? Please explain.
Yeah. So in 2020, at the beginning of this year, we did our what we considered our final legislative effort, which was LD 52, an act to restore non-medical exemptions. We knew with the political landscape, we were never going to get this bill through. So we focused our strategy on fact finding, things we've not been able to get on a publicly accessible record, like language that was added after the governor signed LD 798. We used this as a way to create a publicly accessible record that we can pull from in future litigation endeavors. At 7 o'clock on a freezing morning, we pulled over 300 people to a rally. We had a 10.5 hour committee hearing. This is an issue that Mainers still very much care about, you know? And since then we've shifted to litigation. The things that we have seen agencies, especially the bureaucratic agencies like DHHS and the Department of Education, continually pull in the last few years, they're not going to stop until they're held accountable. And as long as they can get away with it, they're going to keep doing it. And so we've really focused our work to litigation and to individual advocacy, which is assisting families in Maine that are navigating these complicated laws, assisting families that are just on that path that I was on 10 years ago with finding answers and finding support. And between the two, that those are kind of our two main focuses right now, is litigation and individual advocacy.
This is interesting. Tiffany, you mentioned one thing that really grabbed my attention. You said that because of the political landscape, your work wouldn't be as successful as it would be if you had a Republican majority in the state. Since when did healthcare and vaccine policies are a political issue? It really is mind-blowing.
You wouldn't think that they would be. You wouldn't think they should be. The thing that I've learned over the years is that, unfortunately, the two have become so intertwined, they sort of depend on one another. You know, we've got a revolving door at the FDA and the CDC that has existed for 40 years. All but three FDA directors in the last 40 years have left their position as FDA commissioner to go on to high paid executive positions at pharmaceutical industries. In Maine, it's a smaller pond, but it's still that same intertwined. You know, our governor right now is Janet Mills. Her sister is the former director of the Maine CDC. She is a current executive on the board for our largest hospital network in the state. In fact, during our lawsuit in 2021, we actually found out that her sister specifically requested the healthcare worker mandate because they wanted to mandate their hospital and employees started quitting. So they wanted to make it so that the employees would have to comply because there would be nowhere else to go.
Wow. Tiffany, this is terrible. What's happening with this corruption within our regulatory agencies and in the local level? Here's something I wanted to ask you about your organization. On your webpage that describes your guiding principles, you advocate for the need to strike a balance between technology and nature to advance human development. You acknowledge the benefits of technology that have been manifesting themselves in extended lifespans, quality of life, reduced mortality. And then you say, quote, technology works worst when it imposes new risks on human development, creating a greater distance between nature and man. But I have one issue with this statement. By definition, technology is the antithesis of nature, as we create tools specifically to overcome our dependence on nature, which is often cruel and very ferocious, which implies that any man-made tool or technique in principle separates us from the natural environment. So it's not clear at what point the separation stops benefiting us. So how would you answer that?
Yeah, I think the key word there is balance. When you're solely dependent on nature, It can be a very violent, volatile environment. I think the same thing exists on the other end of that spectrum, right? Is when you're solely dependent on technology, you are in that same volatile, violent, chaotic environment. It's just of a different type, right? I think the need for balance is something we see throughout issues. I've come to a point where I don't think I would necessarily want a totally red state, but I don't want a totally blue, right? It's that balance that creates the checks and balances that keeps the more extreme ends of both spectrum kind of to the fringes. And you find a balance where you can have a capable society where everybody can flourish. I think the same happens with nature and technology. I think we are starting to see that tip to the scales now where we have technology coming at us where innovation outpaces understanding. So we're playing with things now that we don't have a full understanding of, like AI, like CRISPR, like Neuralink. These are technologies that have really dangerous attributes. Then we don't fully understand the systems that we're playing with, like with CRISPR, where you are editing the genetics. You don't know what the long-term effects of that's going to be, right? This is why we have a flourishing sci-fi industry, right? Is all of these thought playouts where you go into these dystopian realities. And if we're not careful, we don't keep that balance, I think we're going to put ourselves there.
Yeah. Well, and how do you think these risks can be mitigated?
I think humans as a whole, we have a tendency to get really excited and run full force towards something. We tend to get ourselves in trouble doing that. We've got plenty of examples of history where we develop something or we make a discovery that we didn't have before and we run full-fledged into it. I mean, at one point there was radioactive medications on the market, you know? I think we need to slow that down, especially in a capitalist society, which is an important thing to have. But when your innovation is outpacing your understanding of what you're doing, especially chasing profit, you get into dangerous territory. And oftentimes we don't have, you know, an understanding, we don't have following regulation until there's mass tragedy.
Yeah, this is something that we'd want to avoid. And honestly, your website and your guiding principles are very, very interesting, and I found them very unique. And one of them is the safety of medical innovations, which is not unique, but you go even further than the rest of other advocacy organizations and organizations that advocate for medical freedom, etc. So you embrace a philosophy that sets a goal of zero vaccines and other medical adverse events. And as great as it sounds, I mean, how realistic is that? Because even the simplest non-invasive treatments can pose a certain risk while providing great benefits, which implies we'd probably have to give up the entire medical enterprise. So why zero? Yeah, please go ahead.
The idea is that if you're chasing zero harm in your medical innovation, it's one of those goals you're never going to achieve, but it always prompts improvement, right? Okay. So if you're always chasing the best possible outcome with the fewest possible risks, there is always going to be room for improvement. You know, no matter what you're developing, no matter what you're administrating, it's the goal of implementing an industry of supportive healing instead of disease management, right? Is so you create an environment where you're pushed to continually improve what you're doing and continually self-assess and say, what have we done? How could we improve on that? It's not so much that we think we're going to achieve that goal. It's that we feel this is what the goal should always be.
And what do you think needs to be done on maybe regulatory or legislative levels to achieve or at least get close to this ambitious goal?
So the number one, I think the couple of big ones would be to get rid of lobbying. We're one of the only countries that has the lobbying environment that we have. The other one is to definitely close that revolving door. Our regulatory agencies should not be so closely interwound and dependent upon the industries that they're regulating. this sort of just sets the stage for disaster before you've even, you know, taken a step. I think too, our education system, most of us, we were taught what things were. We were taught to memorize things. We were taught that this is just the information instead of being taught how to find information. And I think some teaching kids how to find answers to questions, how to ask good questions and then find the answer, basic literacy of science. You know, kids should be taught throughout school just basic literacy so that as an adult, you can look at a study and you've got some foundation of understanding that you can kind of pick out what the good ones are and what the bad ones are. Instead of creating sort of these gate-kept industries where we've got articles in the Atlantic now saying, no, you shouldn't do your own research. And, you know,
because you're not a scientist.
Exactly.
you can misinterpret this study, you can misunderstand it, and then spread it to your network, and nobody wants to take this vaccine anymore, right?
Exactly.
Yes, and talking about that, another guiding principle that you follow is awareness. And you specifically say that we need to recognize a wide range of childhood epidemics, the new childhood epidemics, that includes autism, allergies, diabetes, obesity, and language delay. But the skeptics, Tiffany, would say that you're exaggerating, and to justify the use of the term epidemic, you'd have to probably prove that all these conditions have increased suddenly within a short period of time, and that the number of cases is well above the baseline. So can you make this case?
So I would argue that baseline is not a good argument when we're literally changing the baseline of human health and what our understanding of human health is. But in the last 40 years, we have seen an increase to now, we have over 80 autoimmune conditions that children suffer from. One in five children have a learning disability. One in 32 have autism. And while autism is a spectrum, and there is a half of that spectrum where the children will still go on to flourish and lead their own lives, there's a half of that spectrum where that is not the case. And that half of the spectrum is starting to get overlooked a lot. And actually, when the CDC's new statistics come out each year, and one in 32 is from last year, that statistic's already 2 years old. So we're actually closer to one in 28 now, because we stay in line pretty well with New Jersey statistics. Theirs come out the year they're done. So we're closer to one in 28. If we don't progress at any faster of a pace than what we've been progressing, we're estimated for autism to reach one in two in something like the next 12 years. That shows that there is something or multiple factors in a child's environment that is having a harmful effect. One in 15 children have asthma now. These are certainly a lot of things that have always existed, but not to this degree. And now we've got all of these new autoimmune issues that are progressively getting worse in children. We may be living longer right now, but that is actually starting, our life expectancy is actually starting to decline again now.
Yeah.
And our children are sicker than ever. So clearly we've passed that point of balance, and now we're falling too far into something. We need to find what that is and fix it.
But you say the leading medical institutions, and I assume that includes the regulatory agencies, are in denial of that. So why, and what do you see as the driving factors of these epidemics?
I think honestly, a key thing is that the pharmaceutical manufacturers themselves, their hands are a little too all over the medical industry. They're allowed to lobby politicians. They're allowed to lobby doctors. They write the textbooks that students are using in medical schools. They get to not only create the standard, they get to set the narrative, create the standard, and decide what truth is. So I think we need to put them back where they belong. And I think our aspiring physicians need to actually learn actual healing and physiology and medicine, and not pharmaceutical-based medicine. And we need to get them out of lobbying altogether. Our laws, our medical industry should not be so driven by the manufacturers that profit from it.
Tiffany, what do you think needs to be done and what needs to happen for deaths and injuries caused by medical interventions to be recognized and compensated for? Considering the scope of corruption, it almost feels like a lost cause. So is justice attainable?
Yes, it's not going to be easy, but yes, I think it is. I think the first step is repealing the 1986 act that removed liability from pharmaceutical manufacturers of vaccines. If there's no liability, there's no reason for a pharmaceutical manufacturer to spend extra money to make a product safer. They will always take that cheaper route, that faster route, that we've seen it over and over again. Pharmaceutical manufacturers come from a profit over people type of model. If there's no risk of liability, and now they're also lobbying for mandated products, we're in a corner, and that 86 bill is the first step that needs to go.
Yes, Tiffany, thank you so much. I would like to thank you for your incredible work and for your time today. Please tell us what's the best to follow you and your work, and where can people go to find more information about your nonprofits?
Yeah, you can find us at healthchoicemaine, all spelled out, .org. You can also find our work for the broader parental rights issues on parentsrightsmaine.org. We put a lot of information, a lot of events and updates, and I encourage everybody to go sign up for the newsletters, follow the website, order some handout cards.
Thank you. That was Tiffany Craig, everyone. Thank you so much for watching. I'm Veronica Kirilenko of The New American Magazine.